Palmer. How are you, sir?
Oh, you're doing something different with the music.
Am I?
Mr. John,
I think it was the same as last time.
Well, no, but you faded it out this time.
Well, it always fades out.
Well, no, but then you started talking over. You're doing your DJ thing.
Oh, I think you're getting more. I started a little bit last time, but I'm getting a little bit better. I'm getting more comfortable with it. But the music is the same. I changed the outro, but we're not there yet. I have to record this whole episode before. That's changed too. I apologize to our tens of listeners, but Jim and I are getting a little bit more professional about this. So I'm sorry if it sounds a little bit different. We're hoping it sounds a little bit better.
So that allows us to go be radio DJs, you know, at the local radio station now. We don't have to work.
Dinosaurs. That's another episode. We've already recorded that. You haven't heard that yet. Anyways.
Oh, so off the rails. who had 60 seconds on their...
We really do need to publish a bingo card, but we were officially off the rails about 10 minutes ago. So anyways, on that note, do have an episode to record.
No, we don't. Who's to say we've ever been on the rails? I mean, really? I mean, to get off the rails? I mean don't you have to be like
the third rail in the New York subway system? Because that's kind of shocking. Anyways, so I have to do a little bit of a lead in here, right? Okay, so I know there's been a lot of talk. We recently announced the R770. There's been a lot of Wi-Fi 7 talk. So Jim and I thought, Jim, I'm going to surprise you. We thought it'd be really, really good to have another Wi-Fi 7 episode.
Oh.
And I'm ducking because Jim's trying to throw something at me from Colorado.
You know, I was actually thinking about this, and I was thinking the exact same thing you were. You know, it's like we've been talking a lot of Wi-Fi 7, so... You know, but we haven't talked to somebody who hates Wi-Fi. So it was like, instead of talking to somebody who likes Wi-Fi about Wi-Fi 7, it's like, let's bring somebody on who hates Wi-Fi and then we'll talk about Wi-Fi 7.
There you go. But so actually, you know, sorry, folks, if you were expecting another Wi-Fi 7 podcast, that's not today. We are actually going to talk switching. My favorite topic.
You hate switching, John.
No, I love switching. See, switches are my favorite, Jim. Look at my board that nobody else can see.
Yes, you switches are your favorite for today, but your smiley face with three eyes is a little unnerving.
That's aliens, you know, it's Halloween time. So
oh, good call.
I could be mean and say I let one of my kids draw it, so you're picking on my kids' art, but the reality is I drew that about 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
And again, nobody can see it. We're not gonna post the video, so it doesn't really matter. And meanwhile, our guest is so they're going, what did I get myself into?
Well, now to be fair, I've known our guest. I met him even before I started working for Ruckus. And he was probably, I mean, so he's been warned. He's known about me for years and years. So yeah.
And he's
the fact that he agreed to came on and he hasn't left yet. I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but anyway, I'll let Eric introduce himself, but just for everybody else, I met Eric at Black Hat 2019. He was there actually doing all of the switching stuff, and I could immediately tell that he hated Wi-Fi. So I said, you know, I got to get you on the podcast eventually. So Eric, thanks for joining us today. Why don't you take a second and introduce yourself to the listeners and let them know just a little bit more about you and what you do.
Well, thank you, Jim, for that fabulous intro and framing me as the hater of all things Wi-Fi and a Wi-Fi company. Makes me very popular and excited to be here today. So, as Jim mentioned, I did have the opportunity to meet Jim at Black Hat in a Wi-Fi challenged environment, watching the world burn. And the simplicity of the switching world has always appealed to me.
To give you a heads up, Eric rolls into the Black Hat Knock one day, and he's carrying like three or four different board games, like the old school board games in the boxes. And he's like, I needed something to do today. So he brings us in, and one of my other buddies, Matt Hall, was there. And he's like, Matt, let's play some board games.
Well, now we're going to have to have Matt on too, but that'll be fun to schedule that one. But anyways.
That's why I like switches. They keep my life nice and boring. No, so my name is Eric Schroeder. I've been an IT professional for more years than I care to admit because it would date me. But for the last 15 years or so, I've been working in the networking world. I worked for Brocade as we acquired Ruckus and have been coming up to speed on wireless slowly and reluctantly ever since. But I have a profound love for networking. I enjoy working with my customers and clients to help them develop network infrastructures that work for them and resolve challenges and issues. And I love switching. So I'm happy to be here. Glad that Jim invited me to not talk about Wi-Fi 7. And excited to share a little bit about why I like switching.
All right. So I know that John wrote it on his board. He claims that he likes switching, but I mean, let's be honest. We all know that he
hates evil. They're necessary evil.
John hates switching, and you hate Wi-Fi. Now you're wrong, and John's right. Well, both of you are wrong.
Nope, you said it's on. I have it recorded. So,
and you touched on this a little bit, but I want you to expand a little bit more. Why is it that, you know, the switching part, you know, what draws you to that? You know, go into a little bit more other than it allows you to play board games at Black Hat.
Well, I mean, that's really the essence of the whole issue, right? I feel like switching is a finite world. When there's problems, I can always figure them out. There's a logical explanation to it. And I feel like switching is a civilized world. Wi-Fi, on the other hand, I feel like is the wild west of networking. Wi-Fi lives in a space that they don't own. They're constantly contending with other applications trying to trample on their medium. There's a myriad of challenges associated with supporting Wi-Fi networks. And, you know, there's never an environment where you just stand it up and everything works and it all makes sense, because there's just too many unknowns. So while I can appreciate the challenge and the variety that Wi-Fi brings, I like my predictable, reliable world. And I like knowing that I can play board games while Jim runs around like his hair's on fire. So that's, that's the essence of it. And I think part of it is, you know, I mean, I grew up in the internet age. I grew up through the dot-com boom. I worked for ISPs and some smaller service providers back in the day. And you know, route and switch was the world in which I grew up. So it's what feels comfortable. It's what feels like home. And I've tried to do all of my wireless certifications and classes, and all it does is make my head hurt and want me to go home and whimper softly in my pillow at night. So that's, you know, kind of the gist of it.
I was all ready to like just jump in and cream you on whatever answer you had. And and you know, unfortunately, you made me think of, you know, I always tell people all the time, it's like, you know, to be a really good Wi-Fi person, you have to be a little twisted. Like, you know, there's just something not natural about what we find enjoyable. So, and the fact that you bring up a bunch of points, this sort of reinforces my thing of saying that, you know, to be a Wi-Fi person, you have to be a little twisted and a little off. Yeah. All right. We'll keep you around. About you.
And I will say this, every chance I get to go and get technical with Wi-Fi and think I know what I'm doing and apply some of it, it just kicks my butt. I realize how much, and how, what I should say is I realize how little I know and how quickly the gap between what I should know and what I do know is spreading.
Well, you but know,
I was going to say, I think he made the good point, though, right? It's like, it almost like switching spoke to him. Somehow the voices in our heads are related to Wi-Fi. I tried to do switching. I mean, when I started in my IT career, there wasn't a Wi-Fi, right? I mean, I started, or it was very, very basic in its infancy. It was, you know, I was hitting the job market in 99. So that was right around prime, basically.
Yeah.
But it wasn't corporate ready. Like, you weren't buying a solution from a vendor and really making it a big deal. Nobody was relying on it. I mean, at that point in 99, people were still making a big deal about the Proxima, whatever, the old red, like PCMCIA cards for your NIC. That was where we were with like corporate enterprise networking, or at least where I was a startup. I tried switching. I did the basics, and that's pretty much where I'm at. It never spoke to me like it spoke to other people. I know people, and Eric, I think you're one of those that can, you're happiest in switching, and you can rattle off everything you need to. And it's like, I don't understand any of that. And then you get crazy people like Jim and I, and you know, it's the scene from A Beautiful Mind where you see all the numbers flashing in front of the guy's face, and it makes sense to somebody, but yeah. So,
I was just going to say, if you didn't get into it till 89, you were coming in late anyway.
Well, I mean, I was only 20 then, 21, but anyways, no, I was 20. I was 21, almost 22, but anyways, not to date myself. People are out there doing math. I'm sorry, people, you're not supposed to be doing math on this podcast. Anyways, Jim, I don't know. I think you had another point before that, and I can pivot to the next question if you want.
So, all right. So you've been, as we've already established, you've been doing switching for a long time, and you have a lot of history. And I will say that, you know, watching you and, you know, at Black Hat and working on the switching stuff, it always amazed me because, you know, I remember the last time we did it, I was like, hey man, I was like, can you go and lock down all the ports across all of the switches across the entire network that we had just built? And you were like, yeah, sure. And he comes back to me like 3 minutes later, and he's like, it's done. And I looked at him like, are you nuts? I was like, that would have taken me like 3 hours, and you come back in 3 minutes. So now I know why I needed the board game. But so that being said, you know, as you've seen switching go from, you know, what it was when you started way back in the day, what are some of the things that you've seen, especially recently, that really, you know, gets you excited? You know, the Wi-Fi people are all excited about Wi-Fi 7. You hate Wi-Fi. So what in switching, you know, what's the quote unquote Wi-Fi 7 in switching that really kind of gets you, you know, excited to talk to your customers about?
Well, you know, I'll be honest, Jim, the thing I like most about switching is the fact that it doesn't change a lot. So I don't have a lot to learn. But, you know, there have been some advancements in switching that have been exciting. And there are some things that I think have really resonated with my customers. One of the things that, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, that's been the most exciting to talk with customers about is kind of this transition from large chassis-based switching to fixed form factor stackable switching architecture, and you know, Brocade kind of pioneered this whole notion of, you know, the stackable chassis or using fixed form factor switches to create a chassis like environment and experience for our customers from a performance and reliability standpoint. And that's been, I think, very transformational in the way people approach the network. Traditionally, people were buying large, these massive monuments to switching in these chassis and putting cards in them. And these devices would live for tens of years in dark places in the data center. And I mean, they worked extremely well, but they were expensive. They were difficult to, I shouldn't say difficult. They were costly to maintain. There was a lot of cost associated with them. And as technology has changed and as, you know, the stackable switches have become more reliable, for most of my customers, we can reduce a lot of that complexity and eliminate most of that cost, and still provide them the same level of reliability and availability and flexibility in their network that they're getting with, you know, the traditional chassis. And so that's been really exciting. And that really resonates with a lot of customers when they realize, hey, wait a minute, I don't have to make this more complicated than I used to. And life can be a lot more simpler than it used to be. And then there's, go ahead. Do you have something, Jim? Sorry.
I was just saying, in defense of the chassis switch, I've seen, a lot of people talking about how when the chassis switch is finally ready to come out of the data center, they make really good coffee tables. So or end tables, you know, you put some glass on top of your chassis switch and it's an interesting talking point in your living room if your significant other lets you do that. But yeah, you know, that's something that chassis switches are good for.
And they do work really well as a small space heater.
Or a large space heater, depending on
if you're tired of hearing people. They make great white noise. It's interesting. I was over to a customer of ours, a public education customer, and they had a large cat chassis sitting in the corner of a conference room. And it was one that I don't believe they'd had in production for at least 10 years now. And I asked them about it, and they said, well, it's big and it's heavy, and nobody's ever wanted to come pick it up. So nobody's complained about it. So we just kind of left it there.
And that's the other thing we're not even getting into with is the beauty part about these fixed form factor, you know, and I'm specifically thinking about ours with the 7150s and the 8200s, because those are what I touch. I do actually touch switches. It doesn't take a team of 20 to put one in a rack. I mean, I remember the old days where, like, whether it was the older switches or the older servers, where you used to get, like, the grab handles, and it took, like, four people to mount it while one person was ready with the screw gun to get it in there with the rails. And, like, you know, my old job, they actually had, like, it looked like an engine hoist that they had that the data center people used to, like, hold it, because some of these things were, you know, you're talking about 40, 50, 60, 100 pounds, depending on how many PSUs you've got in there. Small form factor, single, you know, one RU kind of thing it's a lot easier to mount. So yeah.
And I was about to say, if you never graduated to the electronic lift systems for putting in switches, you never really lived.
Right. But that's, I mean, it's crazy that you actually had to do something like that for that. But,
so, I mean, I get the appeal of the, chassis and the density that you can achieve in large service provider environments, but you know, I went into a lot of data centers where people had these large chassis deployments, and they were just raving about how wonderful it was that they could get so much density in their rack, and yet they couldn't replace line cards because there were too many wires dangling in front of them. They had cable extenders going to other parts of the data center so that they could make cable management work and things like that. And one of the real beauties to this stackable chassis architecture or design is we can spread things out. We can make it so that it's really easy to do cable management. We can interdisperse patch panels and switches so that patching things is much simpler and much easier and much cleaner in the data center. And we just eliminate a lot of challenges. We no longer have environments where we have to plan months and months and months to replace a failed component because we basically have to deconfigure the entire network to get something out. I mean, there's lots of advantages to this stackable chassis design.
You know, that's sense. And it's something that, you know, until you mentioned it, I blocked it from my mind about the cable management part. But yeah, if you've ever seen one of the, especially the really big chassis switches that has, you know, 10 blades, you know, in it, and they're like 48 ports per. I mean, yeah, it's cool. But when you talk to your data center team or the cable team, that's like, hey, you have to go work on that. Like, they start twitching, you know, so and I think as sometimes as a network person, you know, who sits and looks at it from a desk, you know, and you're basically, you know, remoted into it, or, you know, use an SSH or something like that. You forget what we're asking these people to do, to go in and try to be like, oh, we need to pull out blade 5. Yeah, and and all of a sudden it's like everybody's on vacation. They're calling in sick. Like, nobody wants to do it. No, and I guess I'd kind of block that from my mind, having not been in there for a while. But yeah, cable management is a really, really big deal.
It is, you know, and it's interesting. We've kind of gone from this monolithic chassis to, you know, chassis that have two or three connections in them, because chassis still have a place. I mean, larger routing tables, internet routing, things like that, where we just can't put enough hardware into a stackable device to meet some of those needs. I mean, there'll always be a place for chassis, but they've gone from these core critical components of enterprise networks to the high-end backbone driving the internet and things like that, the place where they ultimately really belonged. And we're seeing more and more customers moving away from them for the wiring closet and places where they just don't make sense. And that's been exciting.
So, you know, talking about the switch and the transition, the change, you know, from a chassis to like the stackable design, you know, putting on the clueless hat for a second, I'm good at that. I'm looking at an enterprise stackable or a chassis switch. I'm thinking that's got to have like best in breed specs, and that does more and more is better. How are you, like, when it comes to talking to your customers about this, you're moving them, say, to one or two, are you a 24 or 48 port switch? And you say, hey, we can stack like four or five of them together if you need to eventually. But are they getting less bandwidth? Are they, you know, things like that? What are the limitations, or are there limitations?
Well, I mean, there's always limitations no matter what you're talking about. But the reality is, those limitations are becoming fewer and fewer, and, they're becoming less important as the network evolves. So one of the things that I think really helped us from a stackable switching story was when Foundry got purchased by Brocade. And Brocade came in with this fiber channel technology, and Brocade was very good at making lots of disparate switches work together as if they were all one. And so we were able to steal lots of technology from that fiber channel environment and build this incredibly stable, incredibly robust stacking environment that could achieve most of what the chassis provides. Most of our higher end stackable switches, we can have stacking bandwidth in the terabytes now. So bandwidth usually isn't much of an issue. The chassis have redundant controllers, and in the stackable environment, we have what we call hitless failover, where at least two of the stack units are running as a controller, one in lockstep standby with the primary so they can take over just like a secondary controller would in a chassis. And so what we've done is we've effectively been able to move these reliability and scalability features and functionality into the chassis, and then provide some things that are unique that we don't have in the chassis. For instance, we stack over traditional Ethernet connections. And as such, we can stack our switches up to 10 kilometers apart over LR optics. So I've got customers who will create a stack throughout their building, a core stack that everything goes off of, but a single environment to manage that spans an entire building. And so we can do unique things that we could never do with the chassis environment as well.
Nice. I mean, I'm still stuck 5 minutes ago because, you know, your comment about the cable management, I started my career doing like everything, jack of all trades and cabling up IDFs and MDFs was one of the things I had to do. And I was lucky to work with a gentleman who was, let's just say, very specific about how he wanted things to work. And at first you're like, this is so pedantic. And then you realize that, like, once you're done, it's a thing of beauty. It looks very nice and clean. And like, he color coded it. You knew looking at his stuff, like, okay, that's a 3 foot cable, a 5 foot cable. You knew how long you needed to grab. You knew how long it ran. You knew exactly the path it was going to take. And it wasn't too hard to fish out the tricky cable. Like Jim said, like if you have to change blades or whatever, but just that evolution, a more simplistic, almost a cleaner deployment and getting better stuff without having to do the chassis. I mean, that right there is an awesome thing. And we always talk about, like, you want redundancy and geographic redundancy. And maybe it's not geo redundancy in the sense of like different buildings, different cities rather, but like some of these buildings I'm sure are pretty big and they might have a power outage to take out that closet, but because the switch stack is in multiple closets, they don't lose the stack. You just lose the closet, which is actually pretty nice.
Yeah, so there's lots of cool things like that. You know, it's interesting you bring me back to my cabling days, because back in the early 90s, I did a lot of cabling, but there was no such thing as a 3 foot, 5 foot cable in our world. We custom built every cable so that it looked exactly perfect. And I had my mentor had me remake cables if I made them 1 or 2 inches too long because they didn't look just so. And it felt more like an art project than it did data center design.
Jim and I have talked about this. You go to a well-done cable plant, and you want that to be behind glass and shown off with nice lighting because, I mean, it's just, you know, somebody took a tremendous amount of pride to do that the way it got done, and it's just beautiful.
It was a simpler time, and I'll tell you, there was something nice about it. And it's interesting as we continue to watch, you know, switching evolve. One of the things that we're seeing more and more of now, I mean, you talk about redundancy and geo-redundancy, but we're starting to see more of this concept of switch overlay technology and, you know, different network virtualization technologies like VXLAN, where we can make two data centers that are 100 miles or 1,000 miles apart from each other function on the same layer two domain as if they were in the same building. So we continue to develop these things to meet the needs and the challenges of the converged world, but we're able to design these things and switching and make these things work. And these, you know, technologies, you know, we can continue to do with this, with these stackable switches with VXLAN, for instance, or EVPN, BGP and different technologies. We're able to create these fabrics and we're able to create these extensions where even though there's all our voodoo magic happening on the back end on the switching side, from the end user standpoint, it looks like they've got devices that are plugged into the same switch 1,000 miles away.
You know, it's interesting. You were talking about port speeds and some of the overlay stuff. And with all this new technology and all of this other things that we're doing, how do you, when you go into a customer and you're trying to sell them on, I guess selling them is not really the right word here. Because I get the feeling you don't ever go in and go, hey, you need to buy this switch. How do you handle that when you go into a customer and they have questions like, you know, understanding this concept of 10 kilometer stacking, or, you know, how do we support the evolution of the access layer type of switch? I mean, how do you go into a customer and handle sort of those questions and things like that, especially with how much technology and not just switching, but technology in general and even the access stuff. How do you handle that when you go in to talk to a customer?
So I kind of like to think of all these different options and ways we can do things as tools in the toolbox. But when I go in and talk to a customer, the most important thing is understanding what their environment is, what they're trying to accomplish, and what challenges they're having to get there. And then we take a step back and we can talk through different ways to get there and find a solution that works best for them. So, I mean, my favorite thing to do is go into a customer environment, get in front of a whiteboard and just start writing things down and drawing things up. And oftentimes, you know, we'll spend a lot of time not even talking about our technology, but just talking about what it is they're trying to accomplish, why it's not working the way they want it to, and what challenges they're having. Because we have lots of different ways to solve their problems. But what I found is when we're trying to help customers with technology, going in and saying, well, we just released this cool new R770 and it's going to change your life and it's going to make everything great. And it's going to, you know, be the access point that dominates all. And as soon as you buy it, all of your challenges are going to be fixed. I don't know what your challenges are. I don't know that it's going to fix your problem. I don't know that it isn't going to fix your problem. But, you know, what I found is understanding what it is they're trying to do, and then finding a technology that fits that is the most effective. I've also found that, you know, 90% of the time, we can come up with a great solution with our technology. Sometimes they're looking for something that's outside of the scope of what we specialize in, and there's a better solution. And I've also found that, you know, being open with our customers that, you know, we can do this, that, or the other, but what you're really looking for is X, Y, or Z solution, and pointing them in the right direction is worth its weight in gold, because it develops a relationship where our customers realize that, you know, we're not just trying to push on them the latest and greatest thing and getting them to buy X, Y, or Z, but we're really interested in them succeeding. And we always end up selling more in the long run when we do it that way.
No, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there. And I mean, it's awesome to hear from another, I mean, I'm an SC on the wireless side. Well, I focus on the wireless. I do so wired. So any of my customers are listening. Yes, I really do sell wired, and we have sold wired stuff to my customers. So I'm not ignoring part of our catalog, because you can't do wireless without wired. Right. And that's, I think that was sort of the at least one reason why Jim suggested you as a guest. But it's important, as you said, to sit down and work with the customer. Don't just say, I want to sell them a billion 8200s. That would be great for the bottom line. It's what do you need? And I think that's a question that I think is lost in translation from some people, I think. And that's not a specific to us. It's just in general problem solving. I say that to my kids all the time. Don't just tell me, like, what's the answer? How are you getting there? What's really the problem? Don't tell me, like, will this work? What's the problem? What are we trying to fix? Because we do have a lot of cool solutions, not just switching, not just Wi-Fi, but we don't have everything. And I think the customers that appreciate us having that conversation and really talking through to make sure they're getting the value add, I think that's the ones we keep coming back. So kind of switching gears a little bit. We're kind of coming up on the end of our time with you now. Unfortunately, we could have you back. As much as I do say switches are my favorite, and Jim and I were talking in the background, we could have you back. I mean, we've only scratched the surface. I mean, anybody that knows any of our technology knows we're just scratching the surface about what our switches can do. We could have you back for another episode or two or 20. I mean, still not get into everything. And if anybody likes that, let us know. Stay tuned for the outro. You'll know how to get in touch with us for a change. But so to kind of put a bow on this particular episode, what kind of final messages or thoughts would you have to for our listeners to take away from this? Because I think we probably favor more of the Wi-Fi people. I don't know. We haven't done a listener survey, but there's probably people like me that are much more on the Wi-Fi side. Like, so just general ideas, what would you impart on us? What's something to take away from this?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I've been definitely labeled as a switch guy, and for a variety of reasons. I do sell more switches than I sell access points, but I sell a lot of access points too. And I think one of the key things to keep in mind is there's different technologies that do different things. And I think as technologists, we really get caught up in how can we do the coolest, fanciest, sexiest thing and make this, you know, the most exciting thing from a technology standpoint. And we often lose sight of what's the real business goal here. What are we trying to accomplish? And what's the most cost-effective, easiest to support way to make this work for my organization? And, you know, oftentimes that's a Wi-Fi solution. Oftentimes that's a wired solution. And I think what I would encourage people is be open. I cringe whenever I go into a meeting and somebody says, well, switching's dead, so I need a wireless solution for X, or I need, you know, a wireless solution because we need to be at the forefront of technology or things like that, because there are things that switching still does incredibly well, especially when we start talking about security and confidentiality and a variety of other things. You know, be open to the fact that there are things that that the wired network can still bring to the table, and unique business advantages that our customers are getting from the wired side in addition to the wireless side. And, you know, as you find the right solution for your organization, it almost always includes a mix of the two and fitting those in to the right buckets.
You know, I'm going to kind of add on to something that you just said and then extend it to something you said very early on. I think sometimes as technology people, we kind of sometimes like being the center of attention. You know, it's that whole we're so important. But, you know, at the end of the day, what we really, really want is something stable. We want something that we can rely on and we can depend on. And, you know, to be able to play board games, you know, and because we know that our network is so reliable and so stable. And as much as we joke about John not liking switching, he at least, and I will give him credit for this, knows and understands that, you know, we can't have a good Wi-Fi network with all of its black magic and other type of stuff, you know, without having that rock solid, stable platform sort of backing us up. We have to have, you know, the Erics of the world to make sure that the Jim and the Johns of the world can do our stuff, because if you don't provide us that foundation, then there's no chance that we do our job well. I'm sorry to all the Wi-Fi focused people, but that's just the God's honest truth. You know, if your wired network is trash and it's not stable and you're always fighting that, your wireless network will never, ever, ever work. And well, so
it's the battle we fight, right? I mean, it's not to make this one a new point, but I mean, no, seriously. So thinking back to some past jobs, right? You would always get people say, the Wi-Fi sucks. I even have it here. I've had it at my house, right? And I would then fire up, I would go on my laptop or I'd go on my phone and I'd log into the controller, and because my wife would be like, oh, the Wi-Fi's down. And I'm like, no, it's not. She goes, well, I can get on the internet. I'm like, well, that's different. And she would be like, the smoke coming out of her ears would be tremendous. But the reality is, and this is why, and I know a past job we did this, and I'm sure other people do this, this is nothing new, but like you set up speed test servers, you know, by the controller to test the speed to that point, because that's where your wireless stops. Can I hit that? I'm good. Okay. And then, because people do speedtest.net and they're like, well, I'm not getting speeds. I'm like, well, that's your testing your backhaul. At that point, you're off the wire, or off the wireless rather. You're that's wired from your some jump point, basically. It's not the same test. And I know I'm butchering it for the interest of time, but you need that wired network to be rock solid and stable, like Jim said, and it's got to be configured right. Because if it's wrong, your wireless is going to be impacted. If your wireless is bad, your wireless is bad. But your wireless could be rock solid, perfect, world class, excellent, configured by the best of the best. But that wired network, that underlying foundation, has to be good. And if it's not,
it's DNS. No,
it's always DNS.
You know, it's funny that you say this. It drives me crazy that people can't distinguish the two. And I guess I've slowly come to accept it, but we had an outage with our local ISP that most people are on in our neighborhood, and everybody was getting on the internet complaining that their Wi-Fi was down and my Wi-Fi is not working. And I typed up an elaborate response about how my Wi-Fi was great. It's just my ISP was down. And then I decided not to mock everybody on a public forum, and I deleted it. But
but it's true.
It's true.
They don't make that distinction. They do not. It to them, it's all semantics. And I'm like, but it's, you know, we appreciate it. The three of us on this call and anybody else hopefully listening to this appreciates the fact that when you're troubleshooting the problem, I mean, I don't want to do the finger pointing, right? But at the end of the day, when you're trying to fix the problem, you need to point the finger at the right problem. I mean, I've had times where it's DNS, it's DHCP, it's wired, it's wire. I mean, it could be wireless. We've had wireless problems, I'm sure of it. But it's important to get that right because, you know, and then you always send it up. The executive briefing always says the wireless was down. And then the summary after the action is done comes out, and it's like the fifth page buried in the classifieds that says it wasn't the wireless. But, you know, for us, it's important because we need to know what team has to be the one implementing that fix. But to the family, to the customer, it's the end symptom. It's wireless is down. And at the end of the day, right, like today, 2023, everybody's wireless, right? The devices are all coming without an internet connection other than a Wi-Fi card. Right. 20 years ago, as we talked about before we hit record, everything was wired. So, and to your point, Eric, it's wired in some ways is easier. Not for me, not for Jim. Well, maybe for Jim. But it's easier because it's very almost static, right? There's less things to get, you know, either it's configured or it's not and things like that. Wireless is, like you said, nebulous black magic. Ooh, I'm waving my hands that nobody can see.
Fortunately, not all of us. Not all of us can have that Rain Man-like attention to detail to be Wi-Fi experts, but I appreciate all of you.
This was great. This was completely off the script. That last little bit was, but that drives it home, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I love Wi-Fi. It spoke to me, and maybe we can go to therapy about that. But wireless, it's the old joke. We always talk about this. Wireless is so simple. Right? There's no wires involved. But if you don't have good wired infrastructure driving it, wireless can't do anything. And so, you know, I appreciate guys like you coming on and talking to us and I'm sure you've helped me out or Jim out and probably me out through Jim a few times. Appreciate you. And I thank you for coming on. I don't have any other questions for you. I don't know, Jim, if you do, or if Eric, you have any last words.
I want to say thanks for having me. And it's definitely good to talk about something that I'm passionate about. So thank you.
No, we love it. And I'm sure, Jim, we may have to have you back on because there's plenty we didn't get into.
Yeah. So no, I always have more questions, but at some point in time, we do have to draw the line and say we're done now.
We're getting the hook, so
Eric, thanks for coming on and sort of helping us wireless people understand a little bit more about what the wired network can do to help us out.
Thanks for doing all the voodoo magic so I don't have to.
Our pleasure. All right. Well, on that note, I will, I'll hit the music and we'll catch everybody on the next episode. If you want to contact the show directly, you can email us using the address ruckcast@comscope.com. To learn more about Ruckus products and services that we may have talked about on this or any other podcast, please check the links in the About section of the show.